Today, down the market snakes and up the market ladders. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. In today's market review, we're going to start once again with the US markets before looking at the local situation here. I'm often asked why it is that the US markets form such a large part of my weekend market updates. It's simply because they are the largest markets, the most influential markets, and frankly, are really having a very significant impact here in Australia. What happens over there impacts what happens over here. Now, US stocks climbed on Friday as investors brushed off a stronger than expected inflation reading as both the Dow and the S&P 500 indices clinched their first weekly gain in the past 3 weeks. Consumer prices, as measured by the personal consumption expenditures, the PCE price index, which excludes volatile food and energy components, rose 0.7% in April, which was higher than analyst expectations of 0.6%, and after a 0.4% increase in March. Now, this is important because PCE is the Federal Reserve's preferred measure of inflation. And in the 12 months through to April, the core PCE price index surged 3.1%, which is above the Fed's 2% target. You could say it smashed it, actually, as the reopening economy unleashed pent-up demand. The personal consumption expenditure index approached its highest level in nearly 13 years at 3.6%, which is higher than the 2.9% that economists surveyed by Dow Jones had forecast, and that marks the loftiest level since 2008. The sharp uptick in inflation was driven by a boost in demand for the services sector of the economy, including air travel, recreation, and accommodation, as the reopening gathered pace. But this service-led push in inflation will likely fade. Investors have been closely watching economic data and the comments from the Fed for signs of runaway inflation and the possibility the central bank may begin to pull back on its massive stimulus measures. The data is going to remain volatile as well. The inflation data that we saw this morning with core PCE was a high print, but really not that far ahead of consensus, said Keith Buchanan, senior portfolio manager at Globit in Atlanta. Base effects definitely play a role, distorting the takeaways from some very large year-over-year numbers, he added. The Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 0.19% to 34,529. The S&P 500 gained 0.08% to 4,204. And the Nasdaq added 0.09% to 13,748. For the week, the S&P rose 1.17%, the Dow gained 0.94%, and the Nasdaq advanced a strong 2.06%. And for the month, the S&P climbed 0.55%, the Dow added 1.94%, and the Nasdaq still lost 1.53%. Fed officials have repeatedly maintained in recent days that the central bank is not ready to adjust its monetary support, although some have suggested they are open to begin discussing scaling back its bond-buying plan. On Thursday, Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas President Robert Kaplan said the labour market was tighter than many realise. Despite the data showing a rise in inflation, US Treasury yields fell and helped lift high-growth technology stocks. Falling US bond yields suggest they may be starting to buy the Federal Reserve's bet that the turn up in inflation will actually prove transitory. Salesforce.com, for example, climbed 5.43% after raising its full-year revenue and profit forecasts, helped by increased demand for its cloud-based software during the pandemic. The work-from-home shift clearly accelerated growth prospects. However, the longer-term trend around cloud is a massive market for cloud transitions and digital transformation initiatives for CRM, as the company continues to be front and center on many of these projects in both the public and the enterprise sectors, Wedbush said in a note. The day of green for tech stocks came at the expense of cyclicals, with financials, industrials and energy underperforming the broader market. Boeing fell 1.47% after the Federal Aviation Administration confirmed the plane maker halted deliveries of its 787 Dreamliners, adding fresh delays for customers following a recent five-month delivery suspension due to production problems. But cyclicals are up sharply since the start of the year as investors' appetite has broadened out beyond tech. History suggests this broadening out in the market is actually good news for stocks. We're not going to see the market crashing if, in fact, investors are broadening out and buying more and more, Melissa Brown, the Managing Director of Applied Research at Oncoin, an index and analyst provider, said in an interview with Investing.com on Friday. Market crashes tend to be characterized by a narrow market, a few big stocks going up, while the average stock doesn't. But that doesn't seem to be what we're seeing now. So that is good news, Brown added. The short squeeze on Reddit-linked stocks, including AMC, GameStop, SPCE, continued. The Redditors are set to close out the week with a big win as traders betting against AMC Entertainment, GameStop, Virgin Galactic all had lost a staggering $2.8 billion since Monday. AMC, which more than doubled this week, has inflicted the most pain on short sellers, who have lost about $1.5 billion, according to data from S3 Partners. Inflation concerns have persisted for several weeks and weighed on growth names, many of which reside in the tech-heavy Nasdaq, and the index posted its first monthly decline since October. Volatility has risen, even as the S&P 500 has rebounded to less than 1% below its May 7th record high, and the index saw its smallest monthly gain in the past 4 years. In May. Now, the US stock market will be closed on Monday for the Memorial Day holiday. An analyst cautioned against drawing strong conclusions from Friday's lightly traded market. But that doesn't stop quite a few of them now turning extremely bullish once again. Bullish investors in Bitcoin, though, aren't so jazzed about the long US Memorial Day holiday weekend ahead. Bearishness might be set in to further crystallize in the coming days for Bitcoin and the broader crypto complex, including Dogecoin and Ether on the Ethereum blockchain. There's a bloody crypto weekend coming, Eve Yamarex, president of microeconomic firm Lamarex Co., said to MarketWatch on Friday. While US markets are closed on Monday for Memorial Day, crypto markets are open 24 hours. And he's not the only one harboring Memorial Day anxieties. Billionaire digital asset entrepreneur Barry Silbert tweeted that he hopes that Bitcoin takes the weekend off. Well, there's no chance of that, I'm afraid. A report on Cointelegraph speculated that Bitcoin could still skid to $20,000 or below. The asset was most recently changing hands at around $36,000, down over 7%. Bitcoin is up 24% year-to-date, but off 44% from its mid-April peak when it hit $64,829. Technical analyst Katie Stockton, who runs Fairlead Strategies, said that Bitcoin has benefited from short-term oversold conditions for the past couple of weeks, stabilizing at around $34,000. However, she said it is struggling with its 200-day moving average. Technical analysts use moving averaging as gauge for long-term and short-term movements of an asset. My short-term gauges are pointing higher, but we have no convincing intermediate-term buy signals, she said. With all this in mind, the technical analyst said that support around $34,000 may be in jeopardy after more of the bounce. So we have our eyes on $27,000 as a possible entry. Dogecoin, or Dogecoin, depending on how you want to pronounce it, the popular meme crypto engineered in 2013 as a light-hearted rip-off of the proliferation of Bitcoin alternatives, is changing hands at around 31.6 cents, down over 6%. The altcoin is down nearly 60% from its all-time peak earlier in May. That said, the digital asset is still up, wait for it, 6,500% in the year to date. The number two crypto by market value, Ether, was down 9% and changing hands at around 2,528, up nearly 240% thus far in 2021. However, volatile, the gains in crypto have mostly outstripped those for conventional assets, with perhaps the exception of meme stocks like AMC Entertainment and GameStop. Lamarck said that weekends for crypto have become notoriously treacherous because liquidity dries up. And if there is blood in the water, sharks will pressure this lower and kill the weak competition that was in trouble. The investor and strategist said that leverage in the system has also played a role in amplifying moves in digital assets. A report from Barron's.com, written by Avi Seltzman, explained that there are essentially two Bitcoin markets, one dominated by mainstream brokers like Coinbase Global and Robinhood, and others dominated by investors using derivatives, people who care less about crypto prices rising and are more focused on making money based on directional moves in assets, in other words, volatility. Volatility can breed volatility in such an environment, particularly if few investors are willing to step in to the staunch the carnage as downturns take hold. In fact, a few big whales did come in and support the coin last time. There is no one narrative which accounts for the shift in momentum for Bitcoin and its ilk. A number of reports have pegged it to comments from China to Japan, but the moves for crypto aren't always synchronized with the headlines. To be sure, the crypto community has historically viewed slides as buying opportunities prime for long-term investors. However, new investors may face challenges trying to stomach such major dives. Lamarck said that one big factor that should serve as support for Bitcoin and mainstream crypto has been the ascent of stablecoins such as Tether, whose price typically has a fiat currency peg and therefore more consistent prices. Stablecoins like Tether tend to be seen as a gateway into crypto because they can ease transactions in other crypto using stablecoins. Now, that PCE measure of price changes in the consumer goods and services exchange in the US economy is interesting because along with the consumer price index, the CPI, the PCE is used by the Fed to make monetary policy. However, when compiling the PCE, the Bureau of Economic Analysis excludes food and energy costs because they are deemed to be too volatile. Some critics argue that this is a policy which underestimates the true costs of living. A measure of prices that people live in the United States or those buying on their behalf pay for goods and services. It's sometimes called the core PCE price index because two categories that can have price swings, food and energy, are left out to make underlying inflation easier to see, says the Bureau. Nevertheless, the PCE has spiked to its highest level in 30 years. Against a backdrop of record government spending, there are real fears that inflation risks will not be transitory, as Fed Governor Lyle Brainard mentioned earlier this month to quieten concerns. Back in February, US investor Michael Burry, who predicted the US housing bubble, warned that he expects the onset of rapid and out-of-control inflation, also known as hyperinflation. Looking at history, Burry draws parallels with post-World War I Germany, in which markets soared before the onset of hyperinflation. During the mania of rising markets, exchanges could not cope with demand and were forced to close. Burry likened this to the Wall Street bets movement that saw Robinhood halt trading on some assets. Before the German hyperinflation in the 1920s, everyone from the elevator operator up was playing the market, and volumes became such that the financial industry could not keep up with the paperwork and the Bourse was obliged to close. Sound familiar? Hash Robin Hood down. On whether Bitcoin offers an inflationary hedge, Burry said legally violent, heartless centralized governments would move to crush Bitcoin if it ever increased significantly against the dollar. And this is a message echoed by billionaire Ray Dalio. He said governments would do all they can to protect their monopoly control of the money supply. Dalio sees a successful Bitcoin as the beginning of its demise at the hand of worldwide governments. I suspect that Bitcoin's biggest risk is being successful, because if it's successful, the government will try to kill it. And they have a lot of power to succeed. But then again, who can kill Bitcoin? Anthony Pompeo points out that as a distributed technology, as long as one computer running the node exists, the Bitcoin network lives. For those living in Venezuela, as the country continues to suffer from severe political and economic unrest, harsh restrictions such as jail for mining haven't stopped locals from transacting using cryptocurrencies, with Bitcoin, Ether, Dash and EOS being the tokens of choice. Now, gold vaulted back above $1,900 US an ounce on Friday, effectively crossing the finishing line for May with an 8% gain that handed longs in the yellow metal their best return in 10 months. Bullion had a good week And while the rally appears to be taking a break, it seems it might only be a temporary one, said Ed Moyer, analyst at online trading platform Onya. The true test for gold will be after the next couple of weeks of hot inflation reports, and if we see some surprising better-than-expected non-farm payroll reports, he said, referring to US monthly jobs numbers that have been volatile since February. The higher PCE reading helped gold, which is typically viewed as a hedge against inflation, regaining its erratic $1,900 footing. Gold for June delivery settled at around $1,902. The more active COMEX gold contract for August also rose to 1,905. For the week, both contracts were up about 1%, while for the month they were about 8% higher. That's the biggest monthly gain since July 2020. All things being equal, a higher inflation environment is good for gold, which is seen as the best store of value in times of both financial and political trouble. Yet, that's not necessarily been true in recent months. Gold's rivals, the dollar, and the US bond yields have rallied instead on signs of ramping inflation, as investors bet the Fed would hike rates faster than anticipated, something the central bank has sworn against. Such speculation triggered sell-offs in gold that set it to a near 11-month bottom of around $1,674 before a retreat in yields, and the dollar helped the yellow metal claw back towards $1,900. Now, the Fed acknowledges the price pressures arising from bottlenecks in US supply chains struggling to cope with demand in the economy reopening after months of pandemic suppression. The Fed has targeted an annual inflation of 2% over the past decade, but it has barely met that goal, with critics attributing the mismatch to the central bank's dogged following of the PCE, a tame indicator stripped of food and energy costs, the most volatile components of inflation. On the other hand, the Consumer Price Index, or the CPI, which includes food and energy components, registered a 4.2% growth in April, and that's its largest increase in about 13 years after intense cost increases in the economy rapidly recovering from the coronavirus pandemic. Prices of almost everything from houses to the lumber that goes into building them soared in recent months, scaring economists into believing that inflation growth in 2021 could be the highest in 35 years. Now, over in Asia, Japan's Nikkei 225 leapt by 2.1% on Friday's 29,149, as the Bank of Japan is apparently considering extending pandemic support measures as the country grapples with its latest virus wave. And in China, the fixing of the yuan at a two-year high and its indications that it had no real issue with further appreciation has dampened spirits in mainland China. The Shanghai Index was down 0.22% to 3,600. And the US dollar yuan was also down 0.22% to 6.3684. China reiterated its commitment to reining in environmental emissions from steel output, snapping a bear run in the price of iron ore futures amid reports that it will intensify its scrutiny of the industry with new ministerial oversight. China's Ministry of Industry and Information Technology will seek to establish a mechanism to control steel output based on carbon emissions, pollution discharges, and energy consumption, according to Shanghai Securities News report. Iron ore futures traded on the Singapore Exchange has been in bear market territory for some time, trading at around $172.40 a tonne the day prior, having dropped 22% from a peak, closing close to $222 a tonne earlier this month. That aligns with the performance of the spot market also as well, which fell 1.6% to 189.73 a tonne on Thursday, having peaked at $237.57 a tonne. The instruction ignited a resurgence in contracts for the steelmaking raw material, which climbed 6.2% to $183.04 a tonne. It consolidated its gain even more so the following day. This prospective new policy looks likely to have a bigger impact on steel output than other policies Beijing has introduced in recent times, wrote senior commodity strategist at ANZ, Daniel Haynes. Australia, though, showed no such nerves regarding Victoria's close down, with another good day for commodities and potentially US fiscal largesse, lifting the ASX 200 and all ordinaries by about 1.1%. In fact, Australian shares touched their highest ever level on Friday, eclipsing the intraday record achieved at the start of the month and placing the market on track to end the week at a new peak. the ASX 200 hit 7,179 in Sydney, making that a 1.1% gain for the day, and inching ahead of the prior peak reached in the middle of the trading day on May the 11th. The action on Friday was driven by a 2.1% increase for the materials sector, which includes Australia's global miners, and helped along by a 2% gain for energy shares. South 32, IGO and Oz Minerals were among the market leaders, while Ingham's Group, the chicken farmer, led the market with an 8% gain after increasing its profit forecast. The ASX 100 closed on Friday at 5,942, which is up 1.23%. The Financial Services Index was up 1.34% to 6,553. And the Real Estate Trusts was up 1.57% to 1,491. The Volatility Index was down 2.51% to 1133. The ASX 200 futures was up 0.57% to 7,178. Amongst the banks, ANZ was up 1.12% to 2886. CBA was up 1.61% to 1056. NAB was up 1.42% to 2709. And Westpac was up 1.42% to 2646. Amongst the regionals, Bank of Queensland was up 2.27% to 902. Bendigo was up 2.25% to 1047. And Suncorp was up 1.18% to 1117. Macquarie was up 0.46% to 152.47. And AMP was up 1.73% to 1.175. Still meandering around trying to work out what to do. Genworth was down 2.46% to 277. McGrath was down 0.79% to 63 cents. And Yellowbit Road ended at 9.3 cents. AFG was down 1.76% to 279. Mortgage Choice ended at 1.940. And Afterpay Touch fell 1.14% to 93.93, despite a report that came out from the Reserve Bank on Friday, which basically gives them a free pass to continue to lend, and they're not declared as a credit provider. I'll make a show specifically on this because I think that's a really bad decision from the RBA. SIMAC was up 1.28% to 21.30. The Aussie US dollar was down 0.35% to 77.13, while the Euro Aussie dollar was up 0.45% to 1.5809. The 2-year bond was down 13.89% to 0.062. The 3-year bond was down 11.25% to 0.071. And the 10-year was down 0.18% to 1.631. The gold Aussie cross was up 0.83% to 2,469. And the Bitcoin Aussie cross was down 4.32% to 47,417. Now it's worth noting though that Jeremy Grantham, the 82-year-old investment titan, is still talking about bubbles and commodities and also the index fund situation. He draws many parallels between the bubbles back in 1973 and in 2000 and today. He said the economic drivers and valuations are driving us to a precarious situation. And he went on to say that the developed world is coming back to life thanks to the unexpectedly effective vaccine. He says that this has gone much better than he expected. Meanwhile, though, the amount of stimulus injected into the economy by both governments and central banks have been far greater than expected. We have an almost comprehensively large stimulus program, which, added together with previous ones, will total more than the Great Depression as a percentage of GDP. It's off the scale, he said. We know from the first stimulus that some of the money that flows into people's pockets ends up being used for speculation. And Grantham expects the second round of US stimulus to be no different. He thought before that a good time for the bubble to pop would be when the last major group of investors get vaccinated, but the stimulus appears to have pushed that date back a bit. At the end of each bubble, there's always a phase where blue chip Low beta stocks begin to outperform the exciting growth stocks. He observed this during the latter stages of the tech bubble, and history shows the same thing occurred at the end of the 1929 bubble. And now he says it's eerily similar to 2000. In this current bubble, it's been Tesla and the SPACs at the centre of the storm. Both peaked in January, and both are down more than 30% since then. Bitcoin is having wobbles here too, down, of course, 42% from its highs. And it appears that these mini bubbles are starting to pop, he says. So based on comparison with other bubbles and pushed, you would say maybe another few months, 3 or 4 months, he said. When I think about the pleasant surprise of the size of the stimulus program, the pleasant surprise of the vaccination, I would say 3 or 4 months. They both line up for a decline, which will come in a few months in the future. He said it could be tomorrow. And the definition of a bubble, by the way, is pretty easy. He says, we say 2 times sigma. We have a price series. You can work that out when it's 2 sigma. And if you want to dress it up more than just numbers, you can just insist on having behavioral features like crazy behavior. That's more a sign of the end. And this one has done its duty on every front, he says. It's entertaining and spectacular. And I've participated in one of these back in the mists of time, in a little but spectacular bubble of micro stocks in 1968 to 69. It was thoroughly exciting. I have no doubt that I can't persuade anyone not to speculate. It's far too gripping, thrilling, and everyone is in it together. It's irresistible. All I can do is point out, like a historian really, that this is what it feels like. It feels wonderful. They go up like this, they deviate at the end, and then they crash. And they will all go the way back towards a fair price. And he said, that is what will happen this time. Well, I think that's quite an interesting observation, insofar that I've still held the view that September is the window to watch. For various reasons that I've explained before, this looks like the time when we will really know where we are. Because the stimulatory packages will be easing. The momentum in the market often eases in September at the best of times. And some of the broader indicators, particularly around inflation, will be shaken out. So whilst I understand the enthusiasm and the momentum, I'm with Jeremy here. I think there is a bubble and it will burst at some point. It's just it's hard to pick. But I'm still thinking September is a good bet at the moment, unless, of course, central banks do more of the same and push it out further. But we are in bubble territory. There's no doubt about that. Assets are overpriced. The markets are unstable. Volatility is increasing. And frankly, there's still nowhere to hide. So just be cautious, be careful, and don't get caught up in it. Although, as Jeremy says, of course, most people will. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.